Exodus chapter 20 and verse 17 reads, "You shall not covet." Now it goes on to say, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house." And then it goes on to explain. But you know, when the Apostle Paul was summarizing this particular commandment in the book of Romans chapter 7 and verse 7, Paul just said it this way, "I would not have known about coveting if the law had said, you shall not covet." The Hebrew word in this particular place is the word shamad, C-H-A-M-A-D. That's the Hebrew word. You shall not shamad. And in the New Testament, where Paul quotes it, the Greek word is epithumeo. Okay? That's the Greek word for not coveting or coveting. Now, the trouble is, and here's the question I'm asking, is it ever right, is it ever okay to covet? Is it ever okay to shamad? Is it ever okay to do epithumeo? Is it ever do that? Well, here's the key, and here's the scriptural understanding, is that that word has two meanings. One meaning, to desire or take pleasure in it. The other meaning, to desire or to lust after, to want something that's wrong. So the translators of the Bible try to make sure that you get the right word in the right place and that they don't want to say covet if it's not coveting. Although the King James uses the word covet on a number of places where purely it's the right thing to do. So as used in the Bible, there is the sense that covetousness is altogether right. The shamad is altogether the right thing. Because one meaning is to desire earnestly. I want you to desire it earnestly. Let me give you some Bible passages in which it's the right thing to do. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, Paul writes, "It is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he, epithumeo, wants to do." He's earnestly desiring a good work. If you want to be in the office of an overseer, it's a good work he's earnestly desiring it. In the book of Matthew, chapter 13 and verse 17, Jesus said, "For I truly say to you that many prophets and righteous men coveted, earnestly desired to see what you see." Now, when those prophets, times of old, wanted to know about what these prophecies were that were referring to Jesus Christ and the Messiah, they wanted to know about that. Was that a wrong thing for them to want to know? That's the word epithumeo. They desired with great desire to see what you see, and they did not see it. And to hear what you hear, and they did not hear it, Jesus said. That's Matthew 13, verse 17. And in Luke chapter 15, and verse 16, you'll see it here, how it's used. And he would, you remember the story of the prodigal son, right? Prodigal son. And he went off, he spent all the money, and he ended up poor. And in order to survive, he took a job from somebody else, and they had him feed the pigs. He was feeding the hogs and the pigs. And it says here, and he would have gladly filled his stomach. What it really means is, that's the New American Standard version of it, the complete Jewish Bible goes like this, he longed, he desired, he lusted, so to speak. He longed to be fed with the crumbs. I'm sorry, this is another passage. This is 16:21, Luke 16. Where the woman, you remember, longed to be fed, the beggar rather, this was the beggar Lazarus, who longed to be fed. He desired earnestly, he was almost lusting to be fed, because it was not an evil lust. If you're really hungry, Is it evil for you to really want something to eat? I really am hungry. I really, really want something to eat. Is that evil? No. Desire it? No. It's evil if you take it from somebody else. If you're evil, if I want your food that you're eating, but it's not. And this woman, when she came to Jesus, you know, she said, yes, I'm sorry, not woman. This man, Lazarus, the beggar, saw the stuff that the rich man threw away, and he said, I just would love to have some of the things that he's throwing away, long to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. He'd love to be. He had a great desire to be fed. And the prodigal son would have desired to eat the same food that the pigs were eating. Yeah, I'm so hungry. I just wish I could eat those pigs. But it says, but no one would give him anything. When they were feeding the pigs, he's working there. He sees their paws. Man, I'd love to have that. My stomach is so empty. But he couldn't have it. To long for good food is not evil. Here's one in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 12. It was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves, but you. This is talking about the prophets before. In these things which have now been announced to you through those who preach the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven. Things in which the angels earnestly desired, epithumeo. They wanted to look into these things. The angels, the same word that's used for covet or lust, the angels wanted, in the New American Standard Version translates it, earnestly longed to look into these things. Was that wrong? No. I really, really wanted to know about this. I really have a strong desire. And in Hebrews chapter 6, I'm reading this from the New English Translation. It goes in verse 11, but we passionately want. That's how they translate epithumeo. We passionately want each of you to demonstrate the same eagerness for the fulfillment of your hope until the end. We want you so badly. We desire earnestly for you to demonstrate that same eagerness. Okay, so here are passages in which it's the right thing to desire God's knowledge, is it not? It's the right thing to want to, you know, for the angels wanted to look into what is all this about, this salvation. They wanted to look into these things. It's the right thing that the prophets of old wanted to look into it. It's the right thing for a person to desire to serve God in the office of overseer. In the book of Psalms, Psalm 19, he's talking about the fear of the Lord, Psalm 19, verse 9. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord, I'm reading Psalm 19, verse 9 and 10 now. The judgments of the Lord of the eternal are true. They are righteous altogether. Now, verse 10, they are more desirable. Shamad is the same Greek word, Hebrew word. They are to be more desired than gold. Yes, than much fine gold. They are sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. So to desire God's law, God's judgments, God's ways, the fear to desire to be in the reverence of God, isn't that wonderful? They are to be desired. God's righteous judgments are good. His righteous ways are right. And they are to be more shamad, coveted, longed for, earnestly desired than gold, even fine gold. Now, Jesus, when he was on earth, said this to his disciples. He used the same word, epithumeo, which means covet. It's the same word that's translated covet when Paul wrote in Romans 7, verse 7, you shall not covet. It's the same word. But there's a right use of it. To long for, earnestly want something, earnestly desire it. There's a right word here. Here it is. In Luke chapter 22, verse 15, Jesus said, I have desired fervently. I have fervently, I'm reading this from the Christian Standard Bible. I have fervently desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. I have longed. I have, in a sense, coveted. I have wanted so bad to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Nothing wrong with that. Perfectly okay. Jesus said it. It's perfectly right that he would, that he should do this, because he's just longs for something. If you long for the scriptures, if you long for good food, if you long for something that's right, there's nothing wrong for that. Now, you know, the Buddhists, you know, in the Buddhist religion, they believe that the heaven, nirvana, and all this is the cessation of all desires. That people should, you know, you'll be happy if you give up all your desires. No, you have no desire. But, you know, that's just like, you know, put you in a cemetery, you're dead, you're gone, that's it. But there are certain values that we have a perfect right to desire with earnestness. Every man has a right to desire earnestly an opportunity to work. Isn't that right? I want a job. I really want a good job, an opportunity to work. And no man can live a rich, no human, no person, no man or woman can live a rich, full life who is an idler, whether this idleness comes from laziness or whether it comes from the lack of opportunity to do a good work. To work is sort of godly in a way, right? What did Jesus say in John 5, verse 17? Jesus said, my Father works, and I work. That's what he said. My Father's working, and I work. Every person, therefore, has a right to be a worker and a right to desire to have a job and to have a work. Not only so, but he has the right to work under, you know, proper conditions. If you work for a factory, you work for somebody, you should be able to work under decent conditions and not be harmed by it. So work is proper. Work is the right thing. To desire to work is right. How can a person really, you know, do well in life if you don't have work and a job that earns some money? Now, I'm going to give you the key that I've known several of my friends and have done very, very well. And here's how some of them, who never made a lot of money, did. They lived, they earned money, and lived within their means. And put some of the money aside. Always lived, they tried to live within the means. Cut back on any luxuries. And set money aside. Now, what happens over the years, they have a job, you know, you keep a job and you keep working and you keep working, and you set that money aside. And what do you do with that money that is set aside? Well, you set it aside for many things. Number one, you take advantage of things you use regularly. When they go on sale, buy them, save yourself a lot of money. You know, you say you can, if you drink coffee or if you have, you know, use of toiletries or paper towels, and when it goes on sale, you have a little money, and the extra, you can buy some of the things that you use regularly, saving a great deal later on. The other thing you do with it as you build it up is you start investing it. You start putting it in safe and fairly good, safe and secure investments. And after a while, as you do, you know, all investments have certain risks, but you can multiply that. The United States of America has been one of the great blessings for the average person in the middle class. How can that person in the middle class ever get up to the higher class? By saving some money, putting it aside, investing it, letting the money work, and over a period of 40 or 50 years of work, if you work, you're saving your money, what happens to that? You invest it, you increase it. You're going to be, you're setting aside, so your money eventually will do more for you than your work will do for you, if you do wisely. But you have to live within your means. People who spend everything they have and right to the last penny and have no savings account. I talked to a man some years ago that just devastated me. He said, after 60 years of work in which he had never lost a salary check, said to me, "We have now made $10,000 in the bank. We now have $10,000. When he had kids, when he had people that he could have helped, when he had other things, but they just lived to the end of their spending. And after 60 years of work, to have merely $10,000 is just absolutely ridiculous, irresponsible. You have to do better than that. If you set some money aside, little by little, and invest it. Now, some people say, well, religion is the opiate of the people. You know how religion tells you, just be, that's all right. You'll have your reward in the afterlife. You shouldn't, really do too well. You shouldn't have work here and so on. Well, what does God say? God says in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 31, but earnestly desire, the King James just plainly says it this way, covet earnestly the best gifts. Here are the gifts of God, the gifts of his the spiritual gifts. Covet earnestly, desire them earnestly. What about wanting and coveting knowledge? What about equipping, longing to equip yourself and to learn and to study and to go and get training? Why is that wrong? There's nothing wrong with that. And the word, if you want to use the word epithumeo, I'm going to covet that. I want to learn. My grandfather used to tell me that he was the older son, and this is my mother's father. I never knew my dad's father, but anyhow, my grandfather used to say, when he was a kid, he had to watch the sheep. He was the oldest kid, so he had to be out there watching the sheep. He would attend to them, and he would see, he was like a teenager, maybe 13, 14, and he would see the other kids, the little kids, maybe 6, 5, 4, 6, 7, they would go to school. They were going to this little place in school. And he would sit there, he said, and cry. He would cry because he so wanted to go to that school. He so wanted to learn, and he had no opportunity. He never in his life went to a school or took a class. Never. I've taken many classes. I'm his grandson. I've been able to take many classes. He never was able to go into a classroom ever. He taught himself how to read his own language, finally. Taught himself. He'd just buy things and study it in his little store. And when there weren't too many customers, he learned. He learned some things, but he was self-taught. It's a right thing to do to learn, not only to have a job, but to get training in the job and to do better in the job. God says, earnestly desire. In other words, we want to desire the best God has for us. What did Jesus say? Blessed are they that hunger and thirst for righteousness. And you sometimes have to hunger and thirst for knowledge. The Proverbs tell you, hunger and thirst for wisdom. Seek it. To covet knowledge, to desire earnestly the knowledge of God is right. It's proper. Not only is it the right thing to do, but not doing it is positively the wrong thing. Right? I mean, if you don't covet and desire earnestly the knowledge of God and the ways of God, it's wrong. It's not only not right, it's wrong. What if the prodigal son, okay, let's go back to the prodigal son. He lost all his money. Now he's working for somebody else. And he just, I'd love, I'm longing to eat what those pigs are eating. I just wish I could eat some of that, you know. Nothing wrong with that longing to be fed. But what if the prodigal son had said to him, well, I know life is not very good, but, you know, this is just the best I can do. This is just the best I can do. I just have to stay here. There's no way that I can do better than this. I left. But you know, he didn't do that, did he? What did he do? He's sitting out here and he finally says to himself, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm out here. I'm feeding pigs. I would like to eat what they're eating. Nobody's going to give me anything. But I mean, there I see them feeding. I'm working here. I'm sleeping in the very poor circumstances. I'm not being fed well. You know, my father treats his hands, his workers, much better than this. I'm going to go back. I'm going to ask. I'm going to tell my dad that I goofed up. You know, I really blew it this time. I would love to work for you. Just treat me as a hand. Don't treat me like your son because I already spent the inheritance. I'll come back and work for you. Just let me be a worker, and it'll be better than what I have here. He wanted to improve himself. Otherwise, he could have been just useless. I'll just stay here in this circumstance. I'm, you know, feeding hogs periodically and doing this, you know, menial work, being treated lowly. To become content to be useless is just, it's just a terrible situation. To be content to a state in which this is all I can do, and I guess I can't be any more, and then this is all the best I can do. I'll just stay there. Why be content with not fulfilling what you can do for yourself and doing the best you can do for you in your mind, in your heart, in the things that you have? Why be content with that? Now, I don't want you to have inordinate desire, okay? Because the other side of epithumeo and the other side of shamad, right? These two words, the Hebrew word for covet, and desire earnestly is shema. The Greek word is epithumeo. And that those are words for covet or desire earnestly. Now, the other side of it, the one side is the right thing to do, to long for something. The other side is the wrong thing to do. There is the side of it that's an inordinate, illegal, illicit desire. And that desire is unlawful against God's law. Why? Because it is asking, it's the wrong kind of desire. Okay? The law forbids our desiring things to which we have no right. I have no right to your car, but I want to take it. I have no right to your house, but I want to take it. I have no right to your wife, but I want to take her. You have no right for your money, but I want to take it. I want to get it. I have no right for that, but I long for it. I lust for it. I covet it. That's what the law forbids. Okay? So, what did the law say? It finally, if you read the commandment, Exodus chapter 20, verse 17, it finally says not only his house, his wife, his manservant, his maidservant, his donkey, his other things, but it finally says this is the complete overall statement, or anything that is your neighbor's. Anything. So to want things which are not yours, the value, it belongs to your neighbors. It is sinful to covet and desire things to which we have no right. In the book of James, James chapter 4, we say this, James wrote this, "You lust and do not have, so you commit murder." This is chapter 4 of James, verse 2. You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and you cannot obtain, so you fight and you quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You don't ask God. How about supplying me with a good job? How about supplying me with opportunities? How about supplying me to meet a woman that I want? How about supplying me with ability to have a car or a donkey or whatever it is that you're looking for? 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Paul wrote this in verse 6. Now these things were examples to the extent that we should not lust, covet the evil things after the evil things, as they also epithumeo, that they also coveted, they lusted after. The King James words uses the word lusted. The word is epithumeo. It's the Greek word that means the same word that's used in Romans 7:7, you shall not covet. These people coveted evil things. They longed for evil things. And we're supposed to learn a lesson from that, says 1 Corinthians 10, verse 6. And you all familiar with Matthew 5. I say unto you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her. Now, it doesn't mean we can't look at a woman, because you can look at a woman, otherwise you have to walk a while with blindfolders, because women are everywhere. So if you look at them with a purpose, for one reason, to illicitly desire, Jesus said, then you have committed adultery with her in your own heart. In Galatians chapter 5, verse 17, this is an interesting statement here, because I want to read this in the Complete Jewish Bible. For the old nature lusts. It means it desires. It desires what is contrary to the Spirit. And the Spirit desires what is contrary to the old nature. The word is epithumeo. They are coveted. They want the flesh, the old nature, meaning the flesh. I'm reading from a Complete Jewish Bible now. So here's the translation. For the old nature wants what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit wants, meaning epithumeo, what is contrary to the old nature. These oppose each other so that you find yourselves unable to carry out the good you intend. You know, your good intentions. Let me read that in the New Jerusalem Bible. For the desires of self-indulgence are always in opposition to the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are in opposition to the self-indulgence. They translated the flesh as self-indulgence. These are opposites, one against the other. This is how you are prevented from doing the things that you really want to do. So covetousness, this covetous, to want things that are not yours, become a sin. It's right to want things. It's right to want your own good job, your own financial stability, your own good health, your own food, your own things, your own friends. I want friends. I want this. I want things. But covetous goes deeper than this. To covet is to desire sometimes more than one needs or can possibly use. Private ownership of property, of course, is a good thing. We like that, right? Everyone should own. You know, it's nice to have your own things, have your own car, have your own house, have your own property, have your own land. That's wonderful if you can do that. But no person has a right to own all the property that there is in the world. What if one person owned all the property? What would we do? Everybody would be running from that one person. He owns all the property there is in the whole world. He owns all the gold there is in the whole world. That is talked about in the Bible, and it is forbidden. Take a look at Micah chapter 2. Micah chapter 2, I'm going to begin in verse 1. God says, Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. There are people just lie. How can we gyp somebody? What kind of scam can we put over on people now? When morning comes, they do it, for it is in the power of their hands. Verse 2, they covet fields and then seize them, houses, and take them away. They rob a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. I talked to a lady years ago in Oklahoma, and she was telling me, we sat at her house, and she owned a little acreage, was just a small place, but she said, look down across this hill, it was a slight sloping down toward a river, beautiful river that went by there, and very fertile land. She said, you see all this, as far as your eye can see, all the way down to the river? I said, yeah. She said, my dad owned that all. He owned it all. I'm left with this little house and the small acreage, which was fine for her, but he owned that all. He was going to, you know, could have had given it to his heirs, made it an inheritance, set them up financially. But he went out. He didn't have a lot of education, and he met with people, and they got him drunk. They had him sign this and sign that, and he signed the things away, and next thing you know, all that land was gone except this little piece up here. And he lost it all, just being gypped out. Really, he was gypped out of it. He was just told the wrong thing. Lawyers took it away from him. He lost his inheritance. So they covet fields, they seize it. They take a man's house and a man's inheritance. And verse 3, therefore thus says the Eternal, behold, I am planning against this family, in other words, the people who do this, a calamity from which you cannot remove your necks, and you will not walk haughtily, for it will be an evil time. That's Micah chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. They covet it. They are earnestly in desire to rip things away from people and take it away by stealing it, by gypping them, by deceiving them. Why do people... Now, I understand that people want to gather a certain amount of money. My brother told me that he wanted to build up a certain savings. He called it his go-to fund. You know, go-to, you know. And that was to be able to tell his employer, go to. If I have the money, you can't do this to me. I have enough to survive, and I don't have to bow and scrape to you. And if you want to do that, I can say go to, because I've got some money set aside. He called it his go-to fund, you know. And that was his ability to save in order to have some sort of security in case he lost a job. That's why one of the reasons you don't want to be out on the street the minute you lose a job. You can't pay for your housing, and now, you know, you're in poverty. So that's fine. But to covet more and more and more, to get so greedy, is to put the secular above the spiritual. It's to put gain above God. It's to seek to get hold of and upon things rather than seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. In other words, you can be so avarice, so greedy, so bent on gathering things that your mind is not on God or the godly things. It is to be so concerned about material values more than human values or spiritual values. Don't care what happens to people. And we know what Paul said. The love of money is what? A root of all evil. A root of all evil. Okay? And God condemns it. God-fearing men and women, you know, don't need to be covetous. Don't need to be greedy. Why is coveting so harmful? Is it harmful? I mean, you know, Paul said, you know, you go along. I didn't think it was harmful. He said, I didn't even know. I wouldn't have known about coveting unless I read it in the law. You shall not covet. You shall not have this earnest desire for these things, these wrong things. Now, what is wrong with coveting? What does it do to us that is in fact harmful? You know, the writers of the Bible condemn it. They condemn it because they're pretty sure that it works evil in those who give way to it. Why would you condemn it if it's not bad? Why wouldn't you want it? They've seen the ruin that it brings on. So then what is the harm for coveting? Here's one of the things that coveting does. Wrongful coveting destroys contentment. You're never happy because you're always wanting something that you shouldn't have, something that's not yours, something you don't have a right to have. Now, it's not wrong to say, I want to do better, I want a better job, I want to have a house, I want to have a car, and I'm going to work for it, set the money aside, get that, I want to try to get. That's not wrong. What's wrong is that you're never satisfied. I want more and more and more, or I want his and his and his and hers and her. I want these things. I want somebody else's. Coveting makes us fretful, feverish, miserable, because it fixes our gaze on what we don't have instead of upon what we do have. What we don't have, we have a right to have a good job. We talked about it. We have a right to want to be educated, right to want to improve our lives. But when your gaze is constantly on everything other than what you do have, you're never contented. Now, I want to just give you one quick story, and then we'll stop here because this is we'll have to continue. Do you remember, we talked about this story many times, Ahab. Ahab wanted that field. He saw that field that Naboth had. It was a little nice little vineyard. And he goes down to Naboth and he says, now who is Ahab? He is the king. How much money, power, physical things do you think the king had? Anything you want, practically. He lives in the mansion. He lives in the castle. He lives in, he's the king. He goes down to Naboth and he sees this field. And he says, sell me your field. And Naboth, he says, this has been in my family a long time. I really don't want to sell this field. It's, this little vineyard, it's a beautiful vineyard. And Ahab said, I really want this vineyard. It's so beautiful and you've got it so taken care of and I'd like to have it. How much do you want for it? And Naboth said, I don't want to sell it. So what does Ahab do? Here's the man who's the king. He comes back. He flings himself, on one of his divans or something like that. He faces the wall and he's crying. He's sitting there. He's miserable. He's crying. Now, he's the king. How much stuff do you think the king has? He has access to horses and to chariots and to women and to foods and the luxuries and the banquets and to respect. And he walks through, oh, there comes King Ahab. You can't curse the king. He's going to be, he's got all this. And he now becomes totally miserable. Why is he miserable? Because I can't have that. I wanted that. I want his vineyard. And he won't sell it to me. And I want that. And I'm now, so here he is crying. The king, the guy who got everything practically, is crying because he can't have that one thing. You see how covetousness makes us miserable. So he's crying, and finally Jezebel comes in and she says, what's wrong? What's wrong? Well, I want that, and he won't sell it to me. She says, well, you want it, we'll have it. We'll figure out a way. We'll take care of that. And, of course, she plotted, bought false witnesses, told them to swear that this Naboth cursed the king, had to have at least two witnesses to say that. And they set him up, killed him, and she said, he's dead now. He paid the death penalty for cursing God and cursing the king. Go down and take it. It's yours. It's yours. So he went, So he got it, but what did he have to do to get it? His covetousness led to the death of another person. Covetousness can lead, you're lusting for it, you want it, and you have a desire for something not yours, making you discontent. Here's a man who had everything and is crying because he can't have this one thing. Where does it stop? Let's talk a little bit more about covetousness, how it leads to all kinds of things, how it rots the soul, it rots your being. And let's talk about what do we do to stop it? How can we overcome it? Talk more about that next time.